Welcome to the... This is not the silver bullet session I was in the morning. This is the only chill-out session at the Architects Forum here. So it's chilling out with code. We're doing a code-only session, almost a code-only session. And what I did, no, what we did, what I did last night, of course last night I was in my hotel room and I came up with a nice application, a nice repository application, an application that stores documents in the file system. And I put it on the stick, and I'll give the stick to my good friend Thomas here. And Thomas is going to do a stunt. He's doing stunt coding today. And he's going to morph this local synchronous application into a distributed asynchronous application right before your eyes. So it will take, I don't know, we timed it and took about 70 minutes for him to do that in small increments. So we don't want to like pull a rabbit out of the hat, but instead want to show you step by step how we are going to migrate this local synchronous code, which is a component, a repository component, how we migrate that to a distributed component running somewhere on the internet that can be reached via the cloud. And it's all gonna be done without WCF. That's what we're gonna promise. See, it's worthwhile sitting here. You're gonna see a different approach to distributed computing, different approach to how you call remote functionality. And it's not through the usual interface, as you're going to see. So this is my backlog. We're doing certain very small sprints, maybe 2-minute sprints, 5-minute sprints. And so far, Thomas has loaded my application, which I gave him on the stick. And this is what we can see. Can you maybe start the application so we can see it running? That's Visual Studio 2010. Great. Which means... it's not working all the time. Of course, right before the session here, his computer crashed, and it took a longer time because he had to load some Windows updates. But now it's running again. Great. What do we see? We see the slick user interface of this repository application. And we can enter some key for the document, a name for the document. This is the document content. Okay, several lines. The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. We can save the document. Maybe you want to save a different document, second document. Just call it X. And maybe it has another line here, another line. Well, one more line. Great. Okay, save that. Then we can find documents. Maybe you want to enter a query expression, more, find, and see. There's this progress bar going on here. There's a list. We found one file containing more. We can load that file. It's already loaded. And we can load, load it by just entering the key of the file there. Very, very simple. You can imagine that. Let's have a look at the architecture, the current synchronous local architecture. It's a front end, and then you see the repository. Maybe you want to collapse the repository folder there. The repository folder, the solution folder, which is this one.
Oh.
Okay. Yes, collapse it so it's easy, more easily visible. Yes. Yes, maybe you want to collapse that too. Right. See, this is two layers, a two-layer application. The repository layer, which is accessing the file system, and the front end. And the repository layer is split into tests. We have unit tests for the repository sitting in the document editor.repository, and we have even a contract. Maybe you want to show the contract very quickly. Yes. No, that's not the contract. It's the iRepository file.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Sorry. Okay, so that's the interface, store with the string and the content, a document going in there. The document is like just a combination of a key and the content. we can load a document by getting giving the repository the key, and we can find them, and we get back abstracts. Not the whole documents, but just abstracts. That's very simple. I guess you can imagine how this is working behind the scenes. I don't want to show you the code. This is clearly is a synchronous interface, and here we pass in an event handler to show the progress. Okay? Great. So, according to my backlog here, the first feature I want to see on our trip to distribution is, can you please show us that this is distributed at all? Can you set it up so that the business logic is running on that process over there, and some kind of front end, maybe just a console front end, is running over here, and we can like remote control the business logic there?
Yeah, of course I can.
How long is going to take that? Like,
I'd say about 7 minutes.
7 minutes, maybe. Okay, we'll see. So what are you going to using for distributing this whole thing?
I'm going to use a software called Xcode App Spaces.
Okay, it's Xcode Application Spaces. Maybe you want to download that so the audience can see how easy it is. So it's a simple download. It's an open source software, so you can download it from CodePlex. And it's just drop in, xcopy deployment, download the DLLs, reference them from your project, and that's it. That's the project site. There's downloads, the current download, we just put it on there today, even more improved compared to yesterday. So that's what he's gonna reference, while I'm very quickly introducing you to some theory behind what we're doing here. And this is where I need the flip chart. Can you like give me some white space over here so I can use the flip chart? Okay, I'm gonna do it like this. So while he's happily coding away, you can watch him there or me, whatever you prefer. I'm quickly asking you something like this. Okay, imagine there's some variable and it's assigned the result of some function. Okay, see? Do something here. Do something S, like service dot do something is assigned to R. Can you just quickly list the expectations you have regarding this? What do you think? How is this going to work? I don't mean the implementation of do something, but like the non-functional workings of this. You have any expectations? What do you think? What do you think about this? One thing you can clearly see, this is synchronous, right? So the code running from here and then continuing there is surely going to wait here until this is done. And then it's going to assign a result to the R variable. What else? What else do you expect from this code? Any expectations? Not so many. Strange. He has some expectations. You have to initialize the service here. Sure, yeah, there has to be an object behind this. Of course, this shouldn't be null. There's a return value, correct. There's an assignment here. Any more expectations? No, you're having a hard time. Of course you're having a hard time. What should you expect from this? This is supposed to just work. Right. But now I'm telling you, and this is not what you're seeing from this year, and that's exactly my point. Now I'm saying, see, this is a WCF channel, or this is a .NET remoting object. Do your expectations change? Do you have any qualms about using this? It has to come back in a reasonable amount of time, correct? Have you thought about that before? Before I said this is a remote object? No. So from the notation here, you don't start to think about anything because you're so used to this running in the same process, of course. The notation, the very notation of WCF and .NET remoting and enterprise services and CORBA suggests there's nothing to worry about. Nothing. Okay? and you're distracted, I guess, yeah. But still, let me bring home my point here. See, once I say this is distributed, this is a service running somewhere on some server down the world, maybe in Down Under, you start to think differently about it. You start to take into account those 8 fallacies of distributed computing by Peter Deutsch. You sure remember them, right? Who knows at least one of those fallacies? Not so many. Are you using WCF services at all? Anybody? Sure. You're not familiar with those fallacies? You can look them up at Wikipedia. And they say, for example, don't take it for granted there's a service at all. Don't take it for granted the service is where you expect it to be. Don't take it for granted this is not taking any time. So there is latency. Don't take it for granted this is a secure line. That's certain fallacies you can fall prey to. And you won't take them into account as long as you'd think this is a local service. And you can't distinguish a local service from a remote service by just looking at this code. The very notation, the method notation of our languages, VB, F-sharp, C-sharp, you name it, is made for in-process calls. And now we are using them with WCF and etc. for out-process calls. And this is really causing problems because teams don't see when they write this, they don't see what is going on there. But it's so different. This is the difference between a local call and a remote call is the difference between me driving and controlling a remote car, remote control car, right before your legs here, and steering the Mars rover on Mars. So what's the difference? Does anybody sit there in the NASA control center with a little stick and control this rover on Mars? Yes, no? No, why not? Latency, right. It's taking 3 minutes for a signal to reach Mars. So you better don't try to control this Mars rover so to steer it away from some aliens there. So it's different if there's latency. So why then, I'm asking you, why then is this notation not different once like the physics of calling a service, of ordering the service, is so different? I don't know. Why is everybody trying to do remoting through this age-old notation? Are you ready there? Okay, great. So let's have a look what he did. And I'm explaining you the alternative in a minute. So what have you done first?
Well, what I first did was downloading the libraries.
Right.
And adding the libraries to my solution.
Okay.
You can see here we need two libraries. It's Xcore App Spaces and Microsoft CCR.
Okay, we don't want to really dig into the concurrency coordination runtime. Let me just say the Xcore application space is based on that. And this is making it like asynchronous, but he does something to the CCR. And what he does is he makes the CCR callable remotely. So whatever you do with the CCR, if you are familiar with it, you can do via a remote call, via some transport. That's what we're going to show you. Okay, so you're referencing those two libraries, and then how do you, like, host? You remember that from WCF, hosting a service? How do you host our business logic?
Yeah, well, that's really easy. You just have to create a new instance of Xcore App Space.
Okay.
And you define it should be running on a specified port.
Okay.
A TCP port.
A TCP port, okay. This is TCP communication. Is that WCF?
No, it's not. It's okay. It's an own TCP based, a socket based TCP
but
service.
Wait, we'll change that. Not in a minute, but in 10 minutes maybe. Okay?
Yeah. What do you have to do then?
Okay, maybe talk into the microphone.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm starting my file system repository.
Okay, this is our ordinary synchronous file system repository. Great.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, and then...
And then, what is this run thing there?
This run thing says, I want to host a port at my local space. So, something where messages can come in.
Okay, this is like a channel for which messages can flow to our current functionality.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so where's our current functionality? Ah, here. See, this is the repository, and we're calling the store method of it, and you're passing in a document. We are building a document with the default default key, and there's the message we were receiving. Okay, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Well, we can only store a single document right now.
Okay.
But, well.
That's just fine. For now. That's the first iteration. So let me scroll to the left. Let me highlight it. It's two lines of code. Two. Exactly two lines of code. One is space is an Xcode application space running on a certain transport. The second is space run this on a certain name, offer this service called store, and the function to offer over the transport is this one. You take the message and store it. Two lines of code for remoting a function. Great. What's the client looking like?
The client is it's nearly the same.
Okay,
we have, again, our Xcode space instance. But this time, we're not using a certain port. We're using zero here, as you can see. So this is because our client doesn't need a certain port.
Okay, we don't need to connect to it. So
only to connect
we don't
to
care
it,
about the port. And then secondly, see, connect says, probably says, okay, there's some service over there, connect to that service over there. It's local, it's
right.
9000, we remember that from the host, and there's the name of our service there.
Right.
That's it. And here, there's a CCR coming around. This is a CCR port, which is a channel, whatever, don't care right now. And we are posting something into that channel, and this gets written or
the file.
Sent to the server and then written into a file. Great. And
so you have seen I've started it. I can start it again.
Okay, this is the server running, and there's the client.
It's finished.
Okay, and where's the file?
Now we can take a look at the file. It's somewhere in my...
Yeah, sure.
Application folder.
Okay.
It's at the server.
Server, debug
and
documents. There's the store default docs.txt.
Here it is.
Okay, right.
With my content.
Good. Great. So this is working. Next task for you. I want to change, be able to pass a name for the document.
Oh, that's easy.
Okay. So I'm going to continue my explanation. So what else? What else should we do? If the method calling here is wrong for remote communication because, see, it's abstracting away all that can happen, what else should we do? And I'm of the strong opinion that we should never, ever call a remote site synchronously. Just don't do it. Do it like this. This is all different. See, there's still the service. Yes, you have to reference it somehow. But then you're saying post, which by its very name suggests something very, very different from calling a do something method. Post some message. Build the message here. See, the message now is called do something. Put in your parameters and pass the message via the post method to the service.
Hey.
Why is that?
I'm already finished.
Okay, sorry. So what did you do? Great.
That was a step that was really easy because what we actually want to do is not send a string over, but send a complete document over.
Okay, so and you're just saying here repository store for whatever message is coming in. So this is a short form. Great.
Yeah, that's right.
So the server got even easier.
Yeah, correct.
Much simpler now. And the client, how does the client look?
Well, the client isn't more difficult either. We just say now, instead of connecting to a port with a string, we're connecting to a port that takes a document.
Okay. So this is really a message type, a custom message type, and you're building a message here, the document, there's the name for the document. We could change the name, so it's not assigned by the server, but the client says, this is the document, the name of the document I want to store. And it says content. Okay, great. Looks good.
Yeah,
and this is, as you can see, this resembles what I've written here. See, post some message, send the message there.
The only additional thing I had to do was making the document serializable.
Okay, the document was a class that existed before. We used that in the synchronous application.
Yeah,
and now you just made it serializable, so we can send it over the wire.
Yeah, so there's no expectations on any class you can send.
Okay.
It only has to be serializable.
Okay, great. So, next task. That was a quick one. How about a query? Yes. How about finding all documents or loading a document? How about loading a document, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's call back the document we just stored. Which is something like the query, right? This where,
right.
You know, who knows the command query separation pattern? Okay, this one. You should follow this principle, which says commands are different from queries, and commands should be handled differently. Commands write and do change data. Queries just query, read from data. That makes asynchronous processing of data much easier, because all reading can be done concurrently. So in that sense, what we just did was we wrote a command. We set up a command on the server side. Now we are setting up a query on the server side. We are sending in some data, and we expect some data to come back. We are sending in a request. We are expecting a result to come back to the client. How is that going to be done asynchronously? Okay, so this is a post, and why is the post better? Because this does not suggest this runs in process. This doesn't suggest that much, so we are more aware of there can be something going wrong here. Maybe the service is not there. Maybe this is an insecure line. Maybe this takes some time. And because this can take some time for the message to go over to the server over there, this is just one way. There's no return value ever here. It's just sending a message. This is how object orientation was thought about 40 years ago. But then came C++ and all got different. This is messages. So, and messages are essentially one-way communication. And that's it. This is how we think remote communication should be, just by messages. You might have heard about message buses, enterprise service buses, event-driven architectures, and so on. Yes, this is all also about messages, but hasn't really come down to ordinary applications like yours. We might not be talking about huge applications in your companies, but maybe smaller ones. But also your smaller applications are distributed applications. And still you're using the improper way of method calls to send messages or to use remote functionality. And this is what the application space is about. It's about making it very easy for you to move from a synchronous thinking based on WCF to an asynchronous thinking when communicating with server-side functionality. That's why the application space is wrapping up the concurrency coordination runtime from Microsoft into a snug ball of easy-to-use remoting functionality. At least that's what we hope you will see when you follow along here our migration project. So we're saying, yes, you should communicate asynchronously, but it shouldn't be hard. We want to make it as easy as possible. You don't have to buy or download a huge service bus product like End Service Bus or Mass Transit or something like that. Just drop in the application space and see how this is working for you. A small solution for doing asynchronous communication. Okay, how far have we gone here? Come here. Not quite finished. Okay. So what does he need to do? Let's think about that a moment. If this communication is just one way, okay, we can easily send the request over there to the server. But how do we receive the result back? Let's have a look. This is the client, and this is the server. And in asynchronous communication, communication essentially is symmetric. So we can send the request like this, and then the server, how does it respond? It sends us a message like this. That's very easy. Response. But that's not what he's doing here. Because this is communication where this the client is sending something and he's receiving it back like somewhere. Not really at this point where he wants to receive it. Not where the post is called. And so we have to watch out and see to that the response, where the response is coming or going, is really defined where the post is sent. And this is why he's putting in a special return channel, so to speak. So he's sending a message there, that's a request, and the request itself contains the information where the response has to be sent back to. That's a very common pattern, and it's easy to program with the application space, at least as long as Thomas is not frowning. What's the problem? What is the problem? What does it say? The best overload method, Mitch, for core part? Some overload arguments. What is the response part? The document part? Receive. Document. Okay. Run. What? A load response part, right? On which line is the error? 25. Okay. Can you split that in two lines so we can see what the problem is? Next. Okay, before response part, next line. Oh, this is load. No, you have to say right. The load part, right. Okay, so what have we done now? We have a single part like an endpoint to send documents to for storing them. And then we need a second endpoint for loading documents. That's what he has forgotten. To set up on the server side, I guess, that's what you mean, a part, a channel, an endpoint, space, yes, which accepts the load requests. And a load request is a message where the ID of a document is sent in and also a response part is coming back. Is also sent in and the response is posted on the response part. Okay, this is working now? Yes. Okay, finished. That's the client document MyDoc received some content for my document.
What we've seen right now before, the exception was that the file wasn't yet existing.
Oh, okay.
But now it exists.
Okay.
So therefore we can see it now.
Okay. Let's have a look at the message you're building there, the load message. Okay, where do you build the load? Here. Right. So we're passing in key equals my doc. That's the question we are asking. And then we are passing in the load response part, which is tied to, see, the space receive over there, tied to a console write line. The console write line is whatever should happen after we receive back the document. And this is sent to the server. And the server, have a look at the server. And the server is using, sees, it's accepting a load. The message here is, it goes to the It goes to the repository, loads the document with the key, pass in with the message, and then posts the whole document back to the response port. So it's for each message coming into the server, it has an individual response endpoint. That's a common pattern for request response style programming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is pretty easy still if you're moving from synchronous function calling remote distributed applications and you move to asynchronous applications. That's pretty easy, I guess. That's a pattern. We can learn that. Yeah?
I think so.
Yeah, that's pretty easy. And then think about the next step. Think about what I've written down here. How would you do notifications? How would you do sending back progress information from a server across the internet? How would you do that using WCF? There's a server running in Australia, and you're sending it a request, and it's taking some time, like a couple of seconds, and you don't want to just sit there and wait. You want to get information about what is happening on the server. How would you send that back? Yeah, you can do a callback channel, can set all that up. How would you do that?
Well, I'd use another response port.
Okay, so let's do that.
What I'm doing now is implementing the find.
Right.
The search function.
Okay, that's the search function takes some pattern. Okay, start hacking away.
Yeah.
The find function takes a pattern and then searches through the documents stored on the server and passes back, returns abstracts for all the documents containing the search pattern. And then, of course, this doesn't take really long, so we artificially introduced some waiting. So depending on how many documents fulfill the pattern or contain the pattern, it takes longer. The more documents contain the pattern, the longer it takes. Yes, this is proportionally. And so we want to see some information back in the client about the progress, and that's a percentage. How many of those documents have been searched already? And so we're getting back some percentage figures. And look what is he doing. First, he's setting up on the server side the find function, and it's another port, another single function that is offered now over the internet, as you like it. And he's calling the find function, and he's passing in the pattern. And now, what is he doing? He's passing in the progress port. The post function, the post method of the progress port is passed in as the receiver of the progress information. It's just the method like any other. So the notifications are fired with an event, and the event is bound to this event handler. So the response port, the progress port post method is the event handler for the progress events. And on the client, see, he's connecting to the server functionality. Okay, test find. We have a find response port? No, not yet. Okay, you can copy that. Oh, it's copy and paste programming. No. Be sure to rename it. Okay, that's an abstract, right? We are getting back abstracts, not whole documents. The document might be 2 megabytes. The abstract is just the key plus the first line of the document. What do we do here? The message is a number of abstracts, so maybe you want to output the number of documents. The whole list, okay. Docs found. Oh, that's quite a bit you're writing there in the lambda function. Okay. So this is just the find response part. This is one part we are putting into the message we are sending to the server, into the find message, right? It's the find message, okay? But there has to go in there another part, and this part is for the progress notifications. One message comes back on the find response part, and many messages come back on the progress part, which has to be set up still. Okay. So this is what's happening, the space receive find response part, that's what's happening with the abstracts, with the documents found, and this is going to happen, this is what's happening here with the progress information. And that's just a single number. Each number, each progress step is sent back through this port because we want to have continuous feedback. Okay. And now you have to send out the message, right? Find port, post, new find. The pattern is very easy. Mm-hmm. Progress part, that's the new kid on the block. Response part, we know that. And semicolon. Okay. See, there's progress coming in. What have you done? What? Oh, yes. The progress numbers were serializable because it's just doubles. But the abstract, the real information about the documents, that wasn't serializable yet. Yes. Okay. Great. Okay, two documents found. And lots of progress here. And let's have a look at the difference between passing back progress, sending notifications, and sending back a result. What's the difference?
Well, there isn't.
There isn't. See? It's no different concept in asynchronous programming. It's right the same. Where you in WCF you need to set up like a special callback contract. You don't need to do anything special with the application space in asynchronous programming. It's right the same. Have a port for anything you want to send back to whoever. That's it. Okay, next round. Next round is, yeah, we saw this exception, right? So what happens if there's an exception on the server side? Maybe you're requesting a document that's not there. That will throw an exception, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so how do you handle that?
Well, that's really easy as well.
Okay,
show
us. So how is that handled with WCF? What do you need to do with WCF? Right, you need to set up a fault contract. You need to do something special. You need to introduce a new concept. There was the callback contract. There was the fault contract. Huh? How many concepts are there after that to learn? What do you need to do with the application space? Well, that's pretty easy. You pretty much do nothing. You just call or send out the message in a different way and pass in another part, but implicitly, for receiving any exceptions. That's it. Keep in mind this is asynchronously, of course. Like any result is coming in any time in the future, also exceptions are coming in at any time. But within the code, that's very easy. You just have this, where's the error port, right?
Here it is. Okay. I'm actually finished.
That's it. Okay, the error port, you set up a special port for exceptions. You bind to it whatever needs to be done when there's an exception happening. you can reuse this error port, of course, for any service call. And then
what I changed was just changing the post method
into
a post with causality.
Okay, this term causality, that belongs to the concurrency coordination runtime. We don't really want to bother you with that much. Just take our work. Can you put a new line here before error port?
Yeah.
Right, okay. We just want to tell you this part is going to be used for any exception happening on the server. Just trust us. Just like this. No big fault contract, nothing special. You can direct those exceptions wherever you like. Let's have a look.
So I changed the key name to something we don't have yet.
Okay, unknown. Finished.
And now you see the exception is thrown. So we see the exception is thrown.
Okay, on the server side, right?
But if we continue, the applications will run.
Hopefully.
And we see up there, the error reached the client.
Okay. Why is it sitting up there?
Well, because everything we're doing here is actually async.
I should have asked the audience. See, we uttered, or we send out a couple of messages like get this, store this, get this, find this, and so on, and load this unknown document. They all send out, and they are all processed in parallel on the server, of course. And so the fault actually occurred first before the wait for the progress.
Now you can also see that the first line is actually finished. This is what we have.
Right.
What's the last line at the client?
Last line on the client side, right.
The program, yeah. It's actually here. So
the program ends or runs into the read line code before anything is coming back. That you have to take into account. That's asynchronous programming. But still, we think it's pretty easy. Once you set your mind to that, it's a pattern. Okay, we need to wait for the answer somehow. You're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really simple.
Okay, so that was exception handling. Next is, well, what are you missing? You're missing this service contract, right? WCF is about writing, setting up an interface and neatly listing some functionality provided by the server, which ties together all that's offered by the service over there. That would be nice, right? So there's no service contract. It's just individual functions. We wanted to show you that first because it tells something about how simple it can be. It's just two lines of code. You don't have to write any method, have to set up no interface at all to become distributed. But this is maybe not how you want to set up your server over there. Sure, that should have a real interface. So that's what we're going to do now. We are going to tie together those different functions into a asynchronous interface, so to speak, a service definition for the whole repository sitting on that in that other process.
Yeah, and we call that worker.
Right. Whatever is running on that server side, maybe you want to go ahead? Whatever's sitting there on the server side and working asynchronously, we call a worker. You might be familiar with the term actor. Actor is this single function sitting on a thread somewhere in the process and communicating through queues with its environment. Scala is a language employing actors, or Erlang with its processes is employing actors, the actor pattern. And we're calling this, what we are programming on the server, we are not calling it actor, we're calling it worker. This is the workhorse. This is accepting messages coming in through different channels and then passing them on to some event handler. And what the event handler then does to the message, well, that's up to it. It can pass it on to the real business logic like we are doing here. So what he's now writing is a worker which is very, very thin and actually just like an adapter. It's translating messages coming in through ports into calls to the business logic. So how do we define a remote service? How do we define an interface for a remote service? We're not using an interface, because an interface essentially is, well, defining synchronous functions. So what we do is we are using, and that's hidden behind the P repo worker. Yeah, quickly. We are using a port set. A port set is a list of ports, each having a different type. And this is binding together what we had in separate ports before that. Okay, thanks. So we're defining a type. We call it P instead of I for interface. This is P for port interface. We're defining that and let the repo worker here, that's the worker class, implement this port set. It is a port set. It derives from port set. And when then we weave some magic in the background. And this magic ties the individual ports to event handlers. This is happening when we register this worker, a worker instance, with this space. Because he's putting those attributes here on top of the methods, the space infrastructure knows, see, there's this method. This method is supposed to be bound to some port. Let's have a look. Is there a port accepting or defined for the load type? Oh, yes, there's a port for the load type. So I'm binding this to the load type port. And then is there a port for find, for the find payload, for the find message type? Yes, there's a port for the find message type. So I'm binding this method to that port. That's all done in the background. And the concurrent versus explicit exclusive attributes are saying, well, this is queries. They can run concurrently. They don't change any state on the server. And up there, the exclusive, exclusive method, the store method, the store event handler, it's supposed to be to run exclusively because it's changing the server-side state. Those attributes make the service thread safe. You can hit it with any number of messages as long as it's queries, they run in parallel. If it's a command which is changing the state, it's run exclusively. So you don't have to fiddle around with locks yourself. You don't have to fiddle around with threats, as you can see here. No threats, nowhere. So all this multi-threading magic is done in the background. It's declarative multi-threading programming. It's declarative asynchronous programming. Okay, so he's now hosting this one worker on the server side instead of hosting different ports. See? And he has to, you have to connect to the worker and not run the worker. Sorry, this is the client already. Connect worker. Because he's connecting the worker, he can pull out the individual connects to the ports. Let's see. Boom. File not found. Okay. It's working like before. But now so all's defined on just through one just one interface, so to speak, which is a class in our case.
Yeah. And you can see that the server code has gotten much smaller. We're just running the worker,
okay.
And the worker implementation itself defines what to do.
Right. The hosting code is smaller, has become smaller, but of course you set up the worker, but the worker now is a central definition for whatever the server is offering. That's easy to read, I guess, instead of having all those small methods flying around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And on the client side, yes, this has become a little bit easier because you just said, connect to the worker, and the repository now is a P worker, a P repo worker with several of those ports, individual ports. Maybe you want to do repo.p0, for example, so we can see there are many ports on it.
Oh, yeah.
See, there are the individual ports, they're numbered 0 to N. as many parts, individual parts, as we passed in types to the part set definition. Great.
Yeah, I can pose to different message types. Yeah. So it's
overloaded.
Yeah, it's overloaded. Yeah. I can pose only these three types.
Okay, so this is all nice and well. This is console application. Great. But that doesn't have to do much with our beautiful, elaborate WinForms frontend yet, right? So what do we need to do in order to get this code, this distribution behind our so far local frontend?
Of course, if we take a look at the iRepository interface, which is used by the WinForms client, we see that these are synchronous methods. So we would first have to edit this repository so that it's becoming asynchronous.
Right. We want to set up an interface, an asynchronous interface, right? It's looking asynchronously, right? And behind that, we want to hide whatever needs to be done on the client to communicate with the server.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, this is going to take like 10 minutes. maybe 15. Okay.
Maybe 15. I don't know. We could switch to the WinForm solution.
What do you mean, switch to it instead of writing it up now?
Yeah. If you want to show the rest of the of our things, or
I don't know. That's up to the attendees. Do you want to see how this is done, or do you want to see just the result? We of course have prepared that. What do you mean? Rabbit out of the hat. Okay, so let's switch to the finished code.
Okay.
I'm so glad we did that. Do you still remember where you put it?
Yeah, I don't. I just don't know which one.
Which of the many solutions, right?
Was it?
Okay, I don't know. Version 7 or 8? I don't know. Probably 8.
I think it's...
Let's open 8. That's just fine. Maybe it has already added some more gimmicks. What's next on our list? What has been next on our list? Publish and subscribe, right?
Okay. Yeah, right.
Okay. Oh.
No problem.
Where's my stick, by the way?
It's still sticking.
Okay. Sticky stick. No, don't pull it now. This can only harm your machine. Okay, let's have a look. So what do we have here? Close all the noise. Noise is the repository test project is noise. It's all noise right now. Okay. So what is there? The client, we don't need the repo client up there anymore. There's a remoting contract. Is that interesting to us?
The proxy.
There's a proxy. Yes. Okay, open the proxy. See, the proxy is a class which implements an AI repository async.
Should we take a look at this?
Sure. Okay. What is there? We have this obligatory store method, we have the load method, we have the find method, but find and load don't return any values anymore. No results. Instead, there are events fired for when the data is coming back from the server. Remember, maybe you remember the morning session, the silver bullet session on event-based components. This looks like a event-based component contract. It's all the offerings and all the needs are defined in just one interface. Okay, so this is an offering. Hey, there might be some documents coming, flying around. Here's a document for you. Great. So whatever comes back from the server is published by an event. What else does the proxy do?
Well, the proxy has a port for every one of these events.
Okay, so it's hiding all the details of this remote communication. We wrapped it all up in the proxy class. So there's a space in the proxy class. There's the repo worker in the proxy class. We hid it in there. It has its own parts, whatever we had defined separately before in the client code, in the console client code, we threw in here. That's pretty much it. And then
You see that the store, load, and find methods are just implemented with posting messages to the underlying worker.
Right. It's just delegating all the requests to the server. Like we did before in the console client, we put this behind the interface methods now. Okay.
So should we take a look at how this looks in the WinForms?
Sure.
Okay.
So we still get injected our dependency. We're still dependent on a repository, but now it's an asynchronous repository. We initialize our repository. We wire up our event handlers because we know this is not an event-based architecture, as we can see now, because this component is still dependent on the other component, and this component is wiring up its own event handlers. But then it's all set. That's it. And I can tell you the display document, for example, and display find results, they've been there before. They are not there just because we're doing asynchronous programming now. It's just common clean coding to pull out such functionality. This is single level of abstraction principle. Okay, there's distinct functionality for displaying results or documents, so this gets, of course, a single method for that.
So,
okay.
Should we
run.
Try it out?
Run it, yes.
Oh, I have to set up the startup project.
Okay. Client or front end, right. A front end has to start later. Okay. Oh my goodness. Server running. Yes, client running. Don't block it anymore. Okay.
Yeah,
great. Okay.
Okay, so now we have our document editor again.
Yes.
We know that we have something like my
document. Yeah. Well,
we probably don't have it in this folder. Yeah, we got the final.fawn exception as before.
And what's happening
now? The error is displayed in WinForms.
This is not too nice, yes, we know. But without changing the user interface much, that was an easy way to just display the error, of course. This could have been done in a different way. Yes, but okay, so my, maybe you want to find my again?
I'll just save something before.
Okay. Just put it down. Some lines, some more, right? Save. Two. Okay. Okay. And what? My. No, some, right. Yes. And it's coming back from the server. Progress information. There's two documents listed in the find box, right? Double click on one of the documents. Yeah, great, it's loading. And it's all coming from the server. See, and there's no error happening here because this is asynchronously updated. That's very simple. To get back some results from the server and display them on the WinForms thread, the sync context, course is translated. Yes. Great. And this is the functionality, the original functionality distributed in a scalable way using asynchronous communication. That's what we wanted to show you in the first place. And now, yes, there's time for that. 5 minutes. No, we just switched to the solution. And now we want to go beyond that and show you publish and subscribe. How do you do publish and subscribe with WCF? Any ideas? Should be easy, right? Not really, right? No. Okay, we want to show you how you do publish and subscribe with the application space. And this is another solution. And I can look at my sheet here. How long did it take you to implement publish and subscribe? And I wrote down like 8 minutes.
Yeah, about that.
Okay, mostly because he had to convert the solution.
Working on another computer.
Okay, what is different for publish and subscribe? Let's think about that for a moment. What has to be done for publish and subscribe? Who's registering? What are we publishing? What are we subscribing to? We're subscribing to new documents. Whenever there's a new document stored on the server, we want to get informed. And then, yeah, we maybe decide, oh, yes, let's have a look at the document.
Okay, so what we first want to do is subscribe to the worker. And therefore, we add two new message types to the contract.
So
subscribe and unsubscribe.
Right. Do we need to handle them in the worker?
No.
Ha!
And that's a good thing about it.
Okay.
We just add them here.
Yes.
And we go to our implementation. And you see there is now a private field Xcode publisher.
Right.
And it says it's of type document. So it lets you subscribe and unsubscribe to.
That's why we added the messages subscribe and unsubscribe document. Because this is a publisher, the whole worker is a publisher for document events.
So what do you have to do now? If any new documents come in, we'll just call the publisher and publish them.
That's it. We don't have to handle the subscribe, unsubscribe messages. That's done automatically in the background. The wiring happens magically and is done by the infrastructure. Okay.
Yeah.
So we just decide when to publish to our subscribers. Right. What do the subscribers do?
Well, the subscriber, we see we have here our repository proxy. Does just, it sends a subscribe message.
Okay. Once it's connected to the repository worker, it tells it, okay, I want to subscribe to your document messages, and please post any new documents to this port. That's it. It's like any other data coming back from the server. And that's it. Okay, so start the server. Maybe you want to start one server, and then two different clients. And this is just one client, maybe, or maybe not. What's going wrong?
I have to start up the set of projects again. That's getting lost some.
Contract? No, you don't want to start the contract.
Oh, yeah.
The server, yes. Front end, yes, but in a different order. Mm-hmm. Okay, starting one server and one front end. Okay, and now let's start a different front end, a second front end. Can you start that?
I'm trying to. I'll need to start it from the Explorer, right?
Okay. You think that's this one here? No. Front end is compiling to the bin folder. Yeah. No. This is
wrong.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So put both front ends in the front of the desktop. Where's the other one? Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, some doc. Yeah. Save. Come on, save. Okay, it's a different. See, it's a wrong client.
Oh, you're right.
Bin, right. Okay, store some document.
Store it again.
Yeah, new, some doc. Okay, and, yeah, another. It is. Okay, great. So this gets broadcasted. And finally, okay, for the final, like the culmination point of all this, can we use a different transport?
yeah, of course.
In this version?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So what would you think of? What do you want to see? You want to see WCF transport? You want to see MSMQ transport? Does anybody see want to see XMPP Java transport? HTTP binding, okay, with an IIS, right? Okay, you look into the demos you can download from that site. It's
a bit more complicated.
Right, it's a bit more complicated. We don't have that set up here right now. But you can do that, and there's a demo for that. Okay, we do what? MSMQ?
I didn't test it on my laptop.
Why?
It crashed.
Oh, right. You know. Because after he installed MSMQ today for the first time on this laptop, it crashed, right. So you maybe want to try WCF.
Yeah, well, okay. That's really easy.
That's really easy. The simple WCF. This so far has been our own TCP socket implementation. Well, and now he's switching to WCF. That's it. Hopefully. Okay, maybe the server, you want to do it on the server too?
Yeah.
And maybe you want to do it in the front end too, because this is just a repo client.
Here.
No, in the proxy.
Oh,
you did it in the proxy.
So,
I'm sorry, yes, he was right.
What we're using here is NetTCP binding, so this is our default for VCF.
WCF. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
We can also do netpipes if you want. We can do web service HTTP.
We have pipes. You can also use shared ports.
Right, shared ports.
We have examples for all of these in our usage demos.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully. See, whenever I do the WCF demo, it crashes. No, but not today.
No.
What's the difference? There's no difference. That's the point. There is no F difference. Nothing. You just change the config string and that's it. And the same is true for Jabber. What we did in the speaker lounge is we set up a Jabber communication between his computer and my computer. You just create a Jabber account, takes you 30 seconds, and off you go. You communicate through the internet from Australia to Austria, whatever you like. It's not that simple. No ports to open in your enterprise. It's just Jabber communication. And you haven't heard about Jabber, then you read up on XMPP protocol. It's so old, it's so mature, you don't really know why it's not used more widely. Authentication problems with whom? Security, yeah, we have security built in, but we don't have time. You find a demo for security in our demo folder, right? Okay, that's probably it. We need to fold it for today, I guess. Thank you very much. I know we have shown you a new way of doing distributed computing. Hopefully you had some fun us doing the stunt here up front. And if you like, download the Exco application space from CodePlex. It's for free. Damn. We don't make enough fortune from it. And we'd like to hear your feedback. Just use it in your samples, play around with it, ask us. We'd love to get into contact with you using this paradigm because it's so easy and we think it's like a small step from the usual synchronous interface-based remote communication in direction of like truly event-based architectures. This is just a small step, and we hope you want to take it. Thank you.